It seems like we have English interpreting already. I'm not sure. We don't have the entire interpreting team up here yet because we're quite a long way away. Good morning to you all. I'd like to wish a warm welcome to everyone who's present today. I'd like to give a particularly warm welcome to the members of the European Parliament, members of the Economic Affairs Committee, particularly their chair, Mrs. Sharon Bowles. We are currently at a joint meeting between the Committee on Foreign, on European Affairs, and we have Mr. Eduardo Cabrita, who's responsible for the Committee on Budgets and Public Finances. We've got Luis Campos Ferreira, and we've also got a committee for the financial assistance to Portugal, represented by Mr. Vieira da Silva. We've got quite a number of members of Parliament here, and I think it's a good moment for us to get direct knowledge of the financial assistance programme. Now, we've been also keeping a close eye on the activities of the Portuguese MEPs in the European Parliament. We've had regular meetings with them. And we're particularly interested in the implementation of the financial assistance programme and the memorandums of understanding. So, as I say, we have a number of committees represented here today. I'd like to wish everyone a warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's important to have close links between national parliaments and the European Parliament. It's important that we get an idea of the political situation and the current state of play on the implementation of reforms. So, once again, I'd like to wish everyone a warm welcome. I'll give the floor to the chair of the Econ Committee, Mrs. Sharon Bowles. I don't know if anyone would like else at the top table would like to take the floor afterwards, but then we'll go to the various members. So we'll have a question and answer session afterwards. But Mrs. Sharon Bowles, you have the floor.
Well, then I'll start again, and I'll give the floor straight away to the Portuguese members, starting with Mrs. Helena Rey of the Socialist Party. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Let me welcome the Portuguese Parliament Committee Chairs and Mrs. Bowles representing the European Parliament. Let me first of all say that it's very important for us to be able to exchange views in this way between the European Parliament and the national parliaments. There's more and more need, we think, to strengthen this cooperation, not just in terms of the present processes like the European semester. There are other subjects connected with the present and future situation of the European Union. I suppose that the members of the delegation are already, all of them, familiar with Portugal's situation. As the Portuguese members of your committee have been very diligent in telling you about the problems that we face in our country because of the implementation of the International Financial Assistance Programme. So I would be so bold as to take on some of the words of Elisa Ferreira that Portugal has done all its homework, done it well, but we haven't got any results for it. We need touchable, tangible results in terms of the operation of the economy and the life of people, and that's fundamental. If there were some positive results to be seen in terms of reducing the structural deficit or the external deficit, and if we could believe that those deficits were, those reductions were sustainable, then we might be able to accept that they have been so catastrophic in terms of the real economy. So there has been an explosion in terms of unemployment, for example. The figure at the moment is near 19%, and the trend is upwards. So we're continuing to destroy jobs, and we're quite unable to create any. So the fundamental problem, not only in Portugal, is this. But we have to start linking, I think, the problems of the countries that have international financial assistance with the reduction of consumption and relate that with what's going on in the center of Europe. Above all, what there is a problem of trust of citizens and a problem of confidence of economic players in the ability not just of Portugal, but also of Europe, to build a real alternative social and economic model. Because the conclusion we have to draw from this crisis is that the economic and social development that we had in Europe is according to a model that has now been exhausted, and we have to reckon on lower growth rates with all that implies, both in terms of public policy and private policy. So we have a problem with a very visible impact on the periphery of this austerity policy. But that's also something that's being felt in the center. Yesterday I read that the reduction of private activity in Germany is now becoming very noticeable and persistent. So what we have is the contagion of austerity from the peripheral countries, which is beginning to drag down the whole of the Eurozone. So one of our first conclusions can be that the removal of poverty, which the reduction of poverty, which was supposed to be one of the main points of these programs, and in Portugal, the choice of going even further than the objectives of the economic assistance program.
Now, my problem is we've got a problem with the revenue, we've got a problem with the policies that are being enacted. And I think it's there that the European Parliament has an important role. You're absolutely at the forefront. I mean, it's very important in terms of setting the future economic and social model. It's important to get the right response to the Commission's proposals. It's important to follow the state of play in the council. So these are subjects that worry us very much. Soon we'll be talking about the subject of banking union. One of the conclusions that came out of the analysis of the crisis is the need to reinforce economic and monetary union. And to do that, Europe needs to move forward to banking union. Well, what do we see today? Germany is dragging its feet on banking union. And despite the terrible management of the Cyprus crisis by the Council, which really has put economic and monetary union in danger, then you see that Germany is dragging its feet. But what we need to see is a rapid process. But we don't see anything on the horizon before the German elections. It seems that Germany is basically suspending everything until after the elections. Europe is holding its breath. They've got federal and regional elections coming up, and I just don't think it's sustainable. We need a European Union that's capable of acting and intervening, and we need to do this in the interest of all of the European countries. So basically, what is the position of the European Parliament on banking union? Second issue is another issue where we see a lot of foot dragging as well, and that's on the financial transaction tax. We know that there's enhanced cooperation. We know that there are 11 countries that are involved. But what's emerging at the moment is that people are dragging their feet on a whole range of the issues. you get the impression that what's been done to now is just an example of incompetence on the part of the Commission and the countries involved. Because only now are we realizing what the consequences are going to be. And this, of course, is connected to another fundamental question, and that's the own resources debate for the European Union and the approval of the multi-annual financial framework. We need a serious budget that is capable of responding to the countries receiving financial assistance. But it's also important that we have an integrated, cohesive response to the situation of all European countries. I think that we are putting in danger the immediate future of the European Union. It seems that in this room, no one's actually interested in these issues. Thank you very much. Now I'll continue this round through the Portuguese political groups. We'll have António Rodrigues from the PSD. That's the main party supporting the government. So, Mr. Rodrigues, you have the floor. Thank you very much, Chairman. I'd like to welcome all of the representatives of the various committees present, particularly the Chair of the European Parliament's Economics Committee. We've got an important chance here to exchange views and impressions, not only about the assistance programs and its implementation in Portugal, but we get a chance to talk together about the future developments at the European level. Now, whatever the situation in Portugal, it's closely linked to the situation in Europe, and we need to look forward to continuing solidarity. Now, I think we all agree about the diagnosis. The previous speaker has already described the situation very well. But we have to be very much aware of the internal and external impacts of the measures that are taken. Well, we know what the numbers are. The numbers are hard, they're difficult. That's a major concern for us, and that's what we need to be dealing with in the short term. But we have to admit that the measures that have been taken have given credibility to the country. We've told the outside world that Portugal is capable of complying. Portugal has assumed its responsibilities and has complied with its responsibilities. It's regained trust of the markets, but not only the markets, but also its European partners. So that's the first important lesson. Quite a lot of people in Europe are talking down the ability of the countries at the periphery and the countries with fragile economies. But we're showing them that we can give an example, that we are capable of fulfilling our pledges. There's a second important message that I'd like to pass on.
That despite the difficult austerity measures that are being enacted, that despite the difficult impact they're having on companies and individuals, that we are being able to help the citizens. There's a very difficult situation in other countries that are under programs. The Portuguese have legitimately demonstrated their concerns and opposition, but at the same time, they have been able to take part in the national effort that's being asked of them. You can't ask a single government or a single party or a single sector of society to take on responsibility for this, but the government is certainly taking its share of responsibility. There are structural measures that need to be taken, and we can't go back to the past. We need to completely change our structures. And I hope you'll be able to pass this message on after your visit. We are convinced that we are calling on people to enact the necessary measures so that we can have a country that's respectable, a country that's admired, because I think that we actually deserve some admiration at the moment. This country is going through a very difficult situation right now, but it's changing and it's part of a wider context in Europe, if you look at it in our economic terms and social terms and political terms, this moment is not an easy one. So we have to remember this is a European Union of 27 countries, not just 10 or 17. You have to remember that a lot of the problems that we face are directly linked to the single currency. So we don't have our own monetary policy. We don't have any means of intervention. But nevertheless, we have to act at the national level.
Financial and monetary issues are dealt with entirely at the European level,
so we can't affect those. The message that we have to pass on to Europe is that don't look at us as a periphery country. Don't look at us as a southern country or a country that doesn't comply with its requirements. Rather, a Europe has been built that is supposed to be a harmonized Europe. Europe has to go beyond financial issues, but it's a structural problem for Europe. Now, if we're going to build a Europe that's worthy of the name, then we need to be aware as European citizens that we should be creating a space of growth. It shouldn't be simply based on the kind of measures we've been taking so far. Okay, we've taken necessary measures on supervision, and banking supervision, the austerity measures that are being taken in Europe. It has to go beyond that. We need to be able to create a Europe that creates jobs across Europe so that we can have a flourishing economy once again, so that we can try to become one of the major poles of economic development at the world level. So it's not just simply a question of Portugal complying with its financial assistance program. It's also linked to working on improving the European Union, and it's also a question of proper European citizenship. Europe needs to take measures that are not simply directed at the countries that it's have their a finger pointed at them. No, it's the whole of Europe we need to be thinking about, and that's what we really mean when we talk about solidarity. That's what we mean when we're talking about a single European economic, social and political space. We're talking about the construction of Europe as a whole. If we just look at the national specificities, that's not enough. We need to look at the construction of a wider space. Well, the diagnosis has already been made. We're all very well aware of the situation. But we shouldn't be so rigid at the European level that we need rapid, flexible decisions, and that's what we need to construct Europe. Because we're having major problems in some of the individual member states as a result. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll give the floor to Celia Morelos from the CDS. That is one of the coalition parties in government. I'd like to ask the speakers to speak reasonably slowly and clearly so that the interpreters can keep up. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairman. I'd like to start by welcoming all our guests from the European Parliament, and I'd particularly like to say that it's a pleasure to welcome you here in the Portuguese Parliament. Now, there's quite a lot of different Portuguese committees here and a lot of Portuguese parties in this room. So I'm sure it'll give you a chance to get a picture of the kind of debate that's underway here on these subjects. Well, I'll start with one important fact. If you're visiting Portugal, I'm assuming that you want to see what's working in Portugal and what still has to be improved and what kind of problems that we identify.
So, of course, that's what I'm going to be talking about right now. I'll start with one thing, though. The CDS is a party which supports the government, and Portugal, at the European level, and particularly among the programme countries, has been pointed out as being a country that's somewhat different, that we've been complying with our requirements and that we're a credible country. And if we are considered as credible and reliable, it's not just the merit of the Portuguese government, it's the merit of the Portuguese people, because they've been facing serious problems and they have shown a sense of responsibility and social cohesion, because we're asking them to make major sacrifices. Now, if Portugal continues to be a credible and compliant country, then the question is, how can we ensure that this is to continue? I think that there are three major issues which are worrying us increasingly at the moment. The first of these is that European public opinion and the dialogue between the institutions seems to be moving to a debate dividing the north and the south of Europe, the periphery and the centre. Well, I'm not going to say that it's simply simplistic, but it's actually wrong. I think that, to discuss the issues in these terms is just wrong. There's a moralising side of the debate, pointing the finger at the South as the side that just wastes money and doesn't comply, whereas the North works and saves money. Well, I think that's absolutely contrary to the idea of Europe. I don't think Europe can survive on that basis, certainly not the European project, if it's based on a dualistic antagonism of this nature. Now, as this picture is becoming more and more dominant in public opinion, I think that this is something that we need to worry about, because I think it really undermines everything that the European project represents. Secondly, there's another factor that concerns us very much, and that has been discussed quite a lot when we had the last review mission. So when we had the last review, they identified an increasing split between the formal discourse from European leaders and the discourse of the European institutions. And it seemed that the European leaders were talking about economic growth, they were talking about the limits to austerity, and talking about employment, because I think that unemployment is the most serious of all the problems that Portugal faces. So, on the other hand, you had the technical analysis of the situation, and the discourse you heard from that was somewhat different. Okay, we've made some achievements with thanks to a lot of effort, but the technical analysis is always presented in a way that's completely divorced from reality. Okay, Portugal is a programme country, but the European institutions and leaders say one thing, but what's actually implemented is, in technical terms, is very different. Now, that is a problem. It's just hot air isn't enough. You actually need the technical side on board. You need concrete measures. And what we feel is that in the negotiations that are underway, there's a big split between the discourse and the reality. So another aspect I'd like to stress. We need to find solutions for the problems that Europe faces, and we need political solutions. Oh, No. Portugal's describes a credible country that complies with its assistance programs, but we keep finding ourselves faced with technical solutions which are aimed at trying to adjust the things that don't work, but we never get political solutions that actually anticipate the problems and preempt them. Now, if Europe is going to make some progress and survive this terrible moment of crisis, this decisive moment in the European project, if it's going to survive, we need political solutions for the whole of Europe. Wherever the countries are situated geographically, we need to anticipate and preempt problems. And we're not going to be able to do that with the kind of technical solutions that we're receiving. We need political solutions. We are very worried about what's happening in Cyprus. It's very difficult for us to see that the assistance programs designed for Portugal and the assistance programs designed for Cyprus, that in terms of fundamental principles like the design of the programs, the issue of trust in the banking sector, which is a key issue at the European level, it seems that there's a bit of a difference in treatment, and I think it's very difficult to paper over that. The key factor in the success of these programs is the trust and belief of people in the programs and a belief that they're just. And when there are disparities like this, problems do arise. I'd be very interested to hear what the European Parliament has to say about this. You're one of the most pluralistic institutions in Europe. I'd be quite interesting to hear your opinions, because this really is a subject of great concern in Portugal. I'm sure you all know about the problems that Portugal faces, but Portugal, as I say, has been a country that's complied with the requirements that's been placed upon it. And this hasn't been an easy thing to do. It doesn't just depend on the will of our institutions or our government. It depends primarily on the citizens, the people of Portugal. They have been very mature in responding to these demands. What we have to do now is ensure that we can create the necessary conditions for Portugal to remain a country that complies with its requirements. Europe needs to ask of us things that are reasonable. They need to ask us to take measures that are best for Portugal and in the interests of Europe as a whole. It's important not only with regards to Portugal, but to the whole of Europe. Europe is going to have to decide whether it's capable of finding reasonable solutions. Okay. You've got austerity measures and the kind of measures that have been imposed on Portugal, but that becomes very difficult, if not impossible, if all of the countries of Europe are following austerity policies. Now, this program is based on building our export capacity, but if all of the other countries following austerity policies, the exports are not going to work. There's very little chance of success. So the great choice that Europe has to make now is whether it's going to continue in a policy of budgetary austerity, or if we're going to look at what's feasible and go for growth. Otherwise, we're going to find technical solutions to problems that have already emerged to try and correct what's wrong. And I think that this is going to end up putting into question the entire European project.
From the opposition party, Left Bloc. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to welcome the European Parliament Committee here on behalf of the Portuguese committees and welcome all the members as well. This is an important moment for us to exchange views and exchange information. from your meetings so far, you must have learnt a lot already about how successful the Portuguese adjustment program has been. You will have heard about the balance of trade success. You will have heard about Portugal fulfilling its commitments, and you might even have been told that there is a social consensus for austerity and for the Troika. But a lot of that that you will have been told is false. First of all, the program is not a success. Austerity has given the country, brought the country into a deep recession. Unemployment level has gone right up. In less than 2 years with the Troika present in Portugal, unemployment has gone from about 12% to nearly 19% of the active population. And if you take young people into account as well, then you have in that age group more than 40% unemployment rate. And that is the direct result of the policies that are being pursued. None of these policies has solved the problems that they were supposed to solve, the deficit and the debt. Deficit is still out of control, way above the government's forecasts. You need to see that in the 2 years of its office so far, the government has never met any of its targets agreed with the Troika for the deficit. And public debt is way above any maximum ever envisaged in the adjustment plan. When the Troika came to Portugal, they said things were going to be difficult and public debt would go up to 114% of GDP, they said. The latest data talk about 128% of GDP public debt. And that's what's come from austerity. The austerity brought a recession. In Portugal, since the adjustment plan started, the recession has taken away almost a month's worth of national income. We're on 7.12%, so 26 days of wealth production have been lost through this adjustment plan, 26 days a year. The result has been unemployment. The result of the policy is that it destroys the economy, it destroys the ability to innovate in the economy, and thus achieve more skills and more competitiveness. There's no economy without growth. If we don't have growth, because we're exporting our university graduates, then that is also because we're not affirming ourselves as a healthy economy. So, in conclusion of my first point,
What I was saying was that if you've got a single monetary union and you're dividing countries into virtuous countries and countries that aren't virtuous, I think that that's a big problem for a monetary union. We've had a whole decade of the single currency, but basically the surpluses in the north have been used to create debt in the south. This is the result of competition between economies that didn't start from the same starting point. But basically you're saying for some countries the rule is extreme austerity, and for the other countries, let's wait and see. Well, you get the impression that it's a two-speed Europe. I think that basically the decision makers are not taking into account the consequences of their decisions. And I think this is very visible when we listen to what we hear from Germany, where the Constitutional Court has unquestionable authority. But okay, on the other hand, you've got the Troika, you've got the Central Bank, you've got the European Commission, but as soon as the Portuguese Constitutional Court came to its sentence, its opinion was basically devalued. They said it doesn't matter what the Constitutional Court says, austerity is the law. So whatever the national constitution says. So you get the impression that there's two Europes, where in some countries they could do everything that they fancy, where other countries have duties imposed upon them. I really don't think that that's going to be any help at all for the European project. If we're talking about deepening the European project, well, fair enough. But what we see in practice is that the European project is falling apart. It's being allowed to disintegrate. If you look at Portugal, Spain, Greece, Cyprus, if you ask the people in the street whether they believe in the European Union or not, well, I think the situation is completely contrary to what we had 10 years ago. It would have been unthinkable 10 years ago. The European Union is now synonymous with austerity and the Troika. That's the reality that people feel in their daily lives. That's what's taking their future away from them. So today we've got an opportunity to have a genuinely European dialogue. It's a good opportunity for us to think about the problem of growing Euroscepticism in the periphery of Europe. Because they're feeling very tangibly the consequences of European policy. And you see growing nationalist and less European feelings across Europe, in the centre as well. Now, this is a concern for all of us. We have to think about this carefully. I'd like to close with one other important issue. Again, we're talking about the construction of the Eurozone, and I think that there's a kind of duplicity of criteria here. If you look at Europe today and the Eurozone, there are basically three types of adjustment package. There's the package applied to Greece, Ireland and Portugal, and a second type applied to Spain, and a third type applied to Cyprus. Now my question is this, where's equality at the European level between countries? It seems that the stronger you are, the better the conditions that apply to you. And where's solidarity there? None of these plans actually provide for proper solidarity in Europe. What it's going to lead to is quite the contrary, to increasing disintegration of the European project. Thank you very much. I think it's now time to open up the debate to the members of the European Parliament and to the other Portuguese members. So I'll now ask for contributions from the floor. Who would like to speak? I'll start the speakers list. João Galão from the Portuguese Socialist Party. That's the only person on the speakers list at the moment. Thank you very much, Chairman. I'd like to welcome everybody who's here today, particularly the committee chair. Now, Olli Rehn has tried to justify the disparities between the treatment of the different countries. Well, I asked him, what justifies the asymmetry in the treatment of the different countries' foreign debts? Now, if I'm not mistaken, there are some countries with high levels of deficits and others with high levels of surpluses. And what Olli Rehn said to me was something quite worrying, which was that basically we've got mechanisms to oblige people with deficits to adjust them, but the countries with surpluses, well, we recommend that they make adjustments. Well, at the end of the day, that leads to a lot of inequality between different countries, between creditor states and lenders. And I think that that is absolutely incompatible with any policy based on equality. I think that it has no respect for the idea of macroeconomic balance. If we want a Eurozone that says that, oh, surpluses are great, that's a sign of competitiveness, that's no problem, but at the same time that deficits are seen as criminal, then what the the Eurozone is saying to the world is that there'll be a permanent kind of macroeconomic deflation that basically means that the Eurozone will permanently have a surplus with the rest of the world. Now, I don't know if you think that this is really sustainable macroeconomically or whether it's really the intention of Eurozone policy. I don't think you could consistently have a surplus with the rest of the world because the rest of the world won't accept it. I think that we're seeing increasing macro and economic and financial instability at the world level. I don't think that the intentions of countries like the United States or China will really accept the permanent European trade surplus. Okay, well, let's collect a few questions. Any from the European Parliament would like to take the floor? Mr. Wangnock from the European Parliament, from France. From the Socialist Group, you have the floor.
Thank you for receiving us. It's always a pleasure to be able to talk with national parliaments, as there's a real problem of democratic deficit. Now, I wanted to welcome Mrs. Bowles and all colleagues from the European Parliament. The Finance and Budget Committee has given particular priority to democratic accountability and follow-up in the national parliament of European-level developments and their influence on the economic and monetary development. That's why we pay close attention to the six-pack. We're paying still close attention to the two-pack process. And in principle, we play a very active role in assessing legislative initiatives that are launched in the European Parliament. And we also think that all political groups should take part in the debates that happen at European level and in the European Parliament, which is why I think it's essential. And Mrs. Bowles just mentioned this. We see that there is a need for a response to the crisis, taking into account the reasons of the crisis and strengthening the idea of democracy and the idea of Europe. The predominant trend in Europe over the last few years is something that gave us a late response, undermining democracy, and now destroying the idea of Europe itself. The causes of the crisis are associated with two decades of deregulation and market speculation in the financial markets, and they're also associated with a weak euro. My view, and this is a democratic debate, and of course, this is going to be a bit different from the view of my colleague who comes from the right-wing majority that's governing Portugal at the moment. My view is a more European one, a more pro-European one. We think there's need for more policy coordination leading to Europe nearer to a federal model, but also more democratic. So the political accountability of the European Central Bank and a an answering of the Eurozone in the to the European Parliament, answerability, and to the national parliaments, is essential to save the European project and the democracy of Europe. It's unacceptable what a number of European institutions have said about the decision of the Portuguese Constitutional Court. Europe is based on the principle of the rule of law. It's a community of free democratic peoples and countries, and both Portugal and Romania only got their seat in Europe when they stopped being dictatorships. I'm taking the example of Romania because our colleague referred to other countries as well. The principle is that the construction of Europe is based on development within solidarity and democracy, which means that at this time of crisis, the response must be more coordination of economic policies, more Europe, but obviously that Europe must be close to citizens based on the principle of democratic accountability for decisions. And the European Parliament is therefore, in our view, fundamental. And we in the Portuguese Parliament will make every effort, for example, through this meeting, to strengthen this good custom of cooperation with the between the parliaments. So perhaps we could hear about the financial assistance program follow-up. I'd like to welcome the chairman of the committee and the members of it. It's a pleasure to have you with us. What I have to say is based on so like what Mr. Mota Pinto said, and in response to Mr. Hans-Peter Martin's question, I'd like to talk a bit about that situation in Portugal. We have a situation which for many Portuguese bears some resemblance to a trap. And why do I say that? Because if you look at the problems of budget imbalance and the other problems, but essentially the budget, the fiscal imbalance, European policy and the IMF policy showed us a path which I think no one can argue has been applied by Portugal with all commitment. And in fact, I'd go further. It's been applied with enhanced conviction. And in terms of economic growth, the impact has been a lot worse than forecast. And that has had a feedback effect on the budget imbalance. As the bigger the recession is, the more difficult it is to get control of public debt and the budget. The response to these difficulties that has come from the European level and also to a certain extent from the IMF has been that we have to correct these imbalances with more austerity. And that is the trap that we're living in Portugal. We may reach the end of 2013 in Portugal with a level of wealth creation and GDP growth between 8 and 9% below, at least below what it was in 2008. Now, there may be questions, there are questions, but there's nothing specific to Portugal that explains this situation, or rather there may be that no doubt things that are specific to Portugal. But one of the things that has been argued is that there needs to be a balance, for example, in the pension system. Before the crisis, Portugal had the second best long-term impact on the public finances of the pension system. It was the second best country in Europe. It was, in other words, the country with the second lowest long-term costs to be born because of demography. Portugal had reached for the first time in its history levels of education of its young people similar to the average of the European Union. And Portugal, as Mr. Mota Pinto said, Portugal needed to change its productive capacity in a way that no other European country needed to. The Portuguese exports were wiped out in a few years, and more than a third of that capacity was lost because of the opening up of borders, which the European Union quite rightly decided on. So the question is, my question is, which European state can defend its pension system and its education system and its macroeconomic balance in the middle of a recession of 8 or 9% within a few years? That's the trap which many Portuguese feel that they are living in. We accept, of course, our responsibilities, but we question more and more whether this is the right response coming from Europe to the enormous economic crisis that many countries are living through. And in particular, is it a response to the lack of credibility of the European project, which is growing more and more widespread in all European countries? Thank you. Anyone else from the Economy and Public Works Committee? Very quickly, let me once again welcome the chairman and all the members of the committee who've been so kind as to come here and exchange views with us in the various bodies that you visited in Portugal, including here, the Parliament. A lot of things have been said, so I think there's very little to add. There's one common denominator that we all have as we look at the causes that got us here, which is that Europe needs to have an economic growth agenda. And that common denominator unites us, regardless of the different nuances of our diagnosis and the divergences of ideology that there may be. And that's a good thing, of course, that there should be in this country and in Europe. It's more a practical question. What are we supposed to do to get this economic agenda? It hasn't appeared. It's not going to appear because some European leader says we need one. This agenda will appear in Europe when there is a strategy in Europe with a timetable to it and with plans and measures identified so that that economic growth happens. And this is more of a practical than a theoretical question. It's perhaps time for us, without complexes, without saying that Europe needs to close itself off. That's not its philosophy, it can't be. But I wonder if it isn't the time to start thinking that Europe shouldn't have disarmed itself completely against other trading blocs, particularly ones in the Far East and also Latin America. In terms of reciprocity of offers. and rates of import. There are some European politicians and parties that talk about a growth agenda, all right. But it's difficult to do that if you have divergent views about how to deal with these trading blocks. I think Europe should stop talking philosophy and start talking about more practical things and be bold enough to do that without complexes. And without abandoning what has been its philosophy for growth so far, which has been a philosophy of openness to the world and solidarity towards the world, because there are economies around the world in more difficulties than we are. But you can't ignore the real problems which are undermining Europe's industrialization and Europe's growth. It's a well-known statement, but we should still always remember it in this kind of meeting. There's no Europe without jobs, and there's no jobs without industry. Can it be that Europe, relative to the other trading blocs, which are growing fast, is it not the case that Europe lowered its barriers, disarmed itself? And perhaps something needs to be done about that in order to re-industrialize. Of course, we've got technologies, we've got environmental technologies, we've got space. This kind of practical question is the one that we need to face up to. And we need to be serious about it. It doesn't help us, and it's simply an illusion for all European citizens if you keep saying Europe needs an economic growth agenda without identifying the specific points that are going to lead us to economic growth. The citizens of Europe deserve better of their politicians and of their states and of their governments than a simple exposure of philosophy and of demagoguery, which is not going to contribute anything to building a European future with more social progress and more social justice even.
Thank you very much. I was wondering if there's anyone else who'd like to take the floor. I think we're coming towards the end of our work in this session. No, I don't see anyone else wanting to speak. So I shall give the floor to the Chair of the Econ Committee, Mrs. Sharon Bowles. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our work. I'd like to thank you all for coming to visit us. I think I can speak on behalf of all of the Portuguese members present today that we hope this dialogue will continue, whether it's here in Portugal or in Brussels. We're always very keen to welcome you and to continue this dialogue. Thank you.